if we're back at 1600 and we have almost all the population speaking Irish, we fast forward to the 1700 where we have more Irish speakers but smaller as a proportion. And as you've said, the loyalty to the language has somewhat been severed. What happened in the meantime? Why is this happening?
Market forces of the money economy where goods are bought and sold and not consumed locally or they're not bartered, and that kind of cash economy opens up a world of commerce and trading, and that somehow Irish was unfitted for this. It's not a particularly convincing explanation, because if you look at some of the areas where Irish was strongest in the 1790s, like the dairy industry of Munster with its flourishing provisions trade, butter market in Limerick and Cork, they remain Irish-speaking, whereas other more backward parts of the country, in economic terms, have made that transition. So the match isn't complete. Another scapegoat that emerged from the 19th century is the Catholic Church. The role of the Church, certainly in the pew we're looking at, is on balance positive for the Irish language. The Franciscans, in particular, at your capital, at Louvain, the Irish College, makes the link between Catholicisation and the Irish language, and it is strongly identifies with Irish. Post the demise of the Franciscans, the church that emerges, that has a seminary, the seminary is opened at Maynooth in the 1790s, is much less positively disposed to the Irish language. And I think that's neatly symbolised by the fact that Maynooth has no facilities for teaching Irish to its students at a time when, as I say, the majority of the population are still Irish-speaking. I think there's a match between areas of the country that are planted intensively, where there is a pretty complete displacement, in other words, of the land-owning elite, sometimes with a degree of outside settlement, a fair degree, or sometimes not. But the key thing, I think, is the extent of the dispossession of the land-owning class, and below them, a middleman hold on long leases from landlords, but who are a resident gentry, where you see a surviving native Catholic resident gentry, much of Connacht and Munster, you get a survival of the customs. You get a sort of an umbrella that protects that society. These people can act as cultural gatekeepers. It slows the rate of change. Where you see a pretty comprehensive changeover, the linguistic changeover is much more complete. Like County Tipperary, why is South Tip Irish speaking in the 1790s, and North Tip, which is traditionally the Gaelic part of Tipperary? The south was in the Ormond Lordship. It was settled, colonised by Anglo-Normans. The north was the O'Kennedys and the Mulryan. Why is that English speaking at this stage? It's because it was precisely because it was Gaelic territory. It was planted more intensively. The landowning element changed, and as it were, the cultural gatekeepers were removed. Whereas the south, the Butlers, even after their fall, they remain middlemen. So the degree of cultural continuity is important, as represented by the people at the top. I think that factor matters.
Well, another really evocative thing in your more recent book, an Irish language poet, a priest, is hiding from Cromwellian troopers in the 1650s, and the servant tells him in Irish to get out and take his precious Irish with him. Another thing people talk about is the national schools, which taught only in English.
That's true, yeah. They had a funny byproduct, though, that they made some people literate in English. Again, a factor you'd have seen in the 18th century. For instance, the West Kerry writer from the Blasket Island, Tomás O'Clihan, probably gained his literacy, firstly in English in the local school, you know, the island school, and then became able to read and write in Irish by having that basic competence, primary competence. So, admittedly, his is an exception to the rule, but the exceptions are interesting as well, you know.
After the famine, a lot of people, of course, died and many others left the country, but some people must have given up speaking Irish or taught their children English rather than Irish.
Ah, yeah, that's well established, yeah. And this famous thing called the tally stick, notching up marks for blows to be given for speaking Irish, you know.
You thought the loyalty to the language had been snapped much earlier than the 19th century.
I took the example in a consolidated conquest of a group of parishes in County Sligo, where you have a poll tax of the 1660s, and it's giving the name of locals, and invariably they have Gaelic forename and surnames. Fast forward, the 1749
I see that in Monaghan of Owen O'Duffy's youth, some people did speak Irish, but it was very much dying out.
I suppose Monaghan was probably like a lot of places in that sense. It would have been restricted to really the very elderly who spoke Irish. And it would have been that widespread sense, I think, that Irish wasn't seen as particularly useful. Parents wouldn't have seen it as useful for their children to get ahead and so on. So in the nationalist view of the decline of Irish, that would build up later. Irish was seen as something that declined very much because of its use in the national schools and so on. Whereas I think a lot of the research would suggest that the reality was that a lot of people simply didn't see Irish as being very useful to them. Somewhere like Monaghan, for example, where you had a lot of rural poverty and you also had very high emigration rates, I think it just would have been a lot more important to learn English.